Last week, there were substantial PCI changes announced. There was some of the back and forth with a variety of other payment players beyond the ever-present Visa and MasterCard joining into the fray. But the more interesting issue was the PCI standard 1.1. And there were some, most of the changes are fairly minor. There are some wording changes, etc. But there were a few substantial ones, such as a backing off of the requirement for encryption, giving some a little more leeway to considering alternatives there. There was also some backing off of the daily requirements, moving at least in one area to weekly requirements. Not as much of a liberalization as a concession to reality that it's not really needed to go daily, or at least that's the way the PCI people are spinning it. Here to let me throw it over initially to Mark. Mark Rash, you've been looking at a lot of the PCI issues and particularly some of the PCI changes, and I know that Chris Knoll has also been looking at that. What do you see as the most significant changes, and how significant are they? And then I'd like to certainly bring in our guest CIO for the panel and get his take on whether these changes are going to be of any help. Mark, what is your take on the most significant changes?
I think the most significant changes are reclassifications of some of the vendors and some of the processors. They get reclassified in different classes based upon the volume of transactions. And there's no consistent theme here. Some people get classified up, some people get classified down. But I think that you have to go back, and if you thought you were a level one, you might now be a level two. And if you thought you were a level two, you might now be a level one. Because most of the burdens arise based upon the level of processor or merchant that you are, you're going to have to look and make sure you've stayed in the same classification. The other problem is really what you just pointed to, which is a bow to reality. The first version was more of a utopian version of what Visa and MasterCard thought were workable standards based upon what people should do. And this is a minor tweaking, I think, based upon what people are doing, recognizing that compliance with these standards is more of an objective and a goal rather than something that people are absolutely going to do immediately.
I think the reclass was a very important change and was recognized the way the threat environment was changing. Specifically, brick-and-mortar merchants are getting hacked at, if anything, a greater rate than e-commerce merchants. And so the reclass at the merchant level basically reflected that, because before you could process up to 6 million transactions in a brick-and-mortar context before you had any validation requirement at all. Now that threshold's dropped to 1 million, which I think is a more appropriate risk management stance for the industry to take. Secondly, the scope of what has to be assessed has changed slightly, and I think all organizations need to take a look at that and make sure that their audit reflects the new scope that Visa and MasterCard have defined through the PCI Security Council. And that kind of brings us to the last point here, which is the PCI Security Council itself. What we've had here is a reorganization where no longer are each of the card associations contributing independently to PCI in sort of a loose committee structure. We now have a dedicated organization to supporting the standard. And one of the announcements that came out with the Security Council is that they will be soliciting input as more of a standards body, which is entirely appropriate, and I think will make this a better standard going forward. The payment system is one of the most complex out there. And for the standard to evolve in the right way, it's got to have participation from all players in the system.
I'm looking over a list of, at least as far as what we can tell, to be all of the changes from 1.0, if you will, to the 1.1 approach. One of the more interesting ones is the wireless change. I'm not sure if everyone had seen that, but basically the wireless change is that they are now requiring wireless scans, even if you are not set up to support wireless. They're looking for wireless analyzers to be used periodically, regardless of whether you think you have done any wireless input. Their rationale, if I understand it correctly, is simply that you may not think you're supporting wireless, but with new software coming in, new devices, etc., there are so many ways and places that a wireless connection could open up without your awareness, without even anyone intentionally doing it. So they are requiring continual scans. How significant do you see that?
Evan, let me point out that if you're not doing it, there's somebody in your neighborhood doing it to you. So it's a common sense type of thing to do. But you know, if you have a company that doesn't think that it has any wireless routers, wireless hubs, wireless payment terminals, or anything like that, they're going to sit there and say, this is a horrible burden. Why do I need this? I don't have a wireless device. Well, it only takes a couple of seconds to do this kind of, depending on your environment, to do this kind of a scan. You look up, you say, we don't have any wireless devices. But it's a good, clean housekeeping thing to do. Now, it's very difficult to manage from a central location because wireless, by its nature, is short range, at least the current invocation of wireless. And so it actually has to be done at the point of sale terminals or within the merchant environment.
And you think it makes sense to do this in the stores? I certainly understand why you do it in a home office, but it's hard for me to imagine a rogue implementation of a wireless setup in a store.
Well, but certainly some employee could add something to some device. It depends on what your hardware is going to look like. Some hardwares won't support any kind of wireless action, in which case, you know, it's a question of spending $45 or actually $20 on a Wi-Fi finder, putting it on the counter, and pushing the button once every couple of weeks and just seeing that nothing lights up.
Let me throw it over to our guest CIO this week, David King from Regal Entertainment. How significant do you see these changes? Are they a significant improvement? I know you've had some concerns on PCI lately.
Yes, we've been reviewing the changes to PCI Standard 1.1 since it came out. The reclassification of vendors based on volume and some of the other criteria really doesn't impact us because we were far over the 6 million transaction threshold. Some of the clarifications were good, and as I believe it was Mark described, bowing to reality and a less utopian approach we're glad about. We're also glad about the PCI Standard Security or the Security Council. We have been having to deal with separately with Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and now Discover, who are all clamoring for compliance audits and meeting with their people and being reviewed. So I'm glad that a single body will be dealing with a single body and maybe a single set of criteria. That'll be good. The wireless changes and wireless scanning and analyzing, the implication there is that the retailer, or in our case, the movie exhibitor, that doesn't have the competence to know or to be able to detect if one has rogue network devices on one system. And part of network security and part of managing one's environment includes the ability to detect intrusions, to detect rogue things that are occurring, and at least for a standard, or the standard that level one merchants are held, and not just for PCI compliance but SOX compliance and a whole variety of other security requirements, I feel like that it's a little bit of an overkill. And then even if one does detect the presence of wireless activity inside one's firewalls, whether or not that wireless activity is secure, whether or not credit card transaction data is flowing across that wireless component, whether or not one can enter through that wireless port and get through to encrypted data or not. I mean, those are, I think that the complexity of an environment that a level one merchant is going to have needs to be looked at more from an engineering standpoint than let's take a wireless analyzer and let's put it inside your stores and see if I can detect any wireless activity.
And in fact, for a company like Regal, it's even worse because Regal, a lot of movie theaters are located in the mall. And so they're going to turn on a Wi-Fi finder and they're going to find lots of wireless connections, some secure, some not secure. And it's not enough they can't just say, well, those aren't ours, because they have no idea whether or not this is a rogue part of their network that somebody has put up. How do you validate in a place that may have 20 or 30 Wi-Fi connections that none of them are yours? It's a difficult task.
Exactly. And really, and what a lot of the PCI compliance is, what we're going to be looking at is, there's so much complexity in our environment and in our infrastructure. We're going to have to segment off the credit card information and have it in a very highly secure portion of the network that is only dedicated to it, and not allow the rest of our infrastructure and the rest of our facilities and sites and everything else to come into to have to be reviewed and to meet all of the different PCI compliance standards. it'll just be too expensive, and the scope and magnitude will just be too much. So instead, we're going to be investing in segmenting off the financial transaction network and have it be as minimal as necessary, and do a number of those types of things, and get away from worrying about the universe and total risk management everywhere, and instead just manage a very small, tight component and portion of our network.
Wireless standard is trying to get at was a problem that was exacerbated by the Lowe's wireless hack and by what happened with the BJ's Wholesale Club. And that was that there's a tendency, if you don't think you have a vulnerability, not to secure it. So in the BJ's Club, they didn't know they were storing credit card numbers. In the Lowe's case, they didn't know, or at least a lot of the people didn't know, they were using wireless. And so what happened is they didn't secure it because they didn't think it was a problem for them, because they didn't think they were running that application. They didn't think there was any need to test for wireless applications because they didn't think they had any. You don't test if you don't think you have it. So this basically says it may make some sense to test for stuff that you don't even think you have running.
Let me throw out one other area, which is certainly one that the council seemed to have spent a lot of time on, which is one of Mark's favorite topics, compensating controls. What I wanted to throw out, there was an interesting comment made by someone last night who was involved in the spec changes, and they made an interesting argument that compensating controls are terrific and it's very appropriate to go that route, and that the council's work was good, but that there might be a unspoken message discouraging compensating controls for the simple fact that you can go with encryption, and if you opt not to or you can't go with encryption, you are likely to have a much more extensive, time-consuming evaluation process to get certification. So as a practical matter, you can go this route, but you're going to be much happier if you simply go with encryption. What is the panel's thoughts on that? David, let me just throw it to you. What is your take on that? Do you think the compensating control options are going to be especially onerous to get certification?
I think that investing in encryption is going to be so less onerous and so less expensive as opposed to going with a whole variety of compensating controls path, because things change, situations change, technologies change, and to manage all of the different compensating controls that one would need to have if one doesn't have encryption is going to be a huge overhead and a huge distraction. We do encryption here. In fact, we encrypt from the moment that the credit card number is electronically digitalized, from the point of scanning throughout our entire systems, the credit card information is all encrypted. And then we've just recently made some changes so that it doesn't even leave the POS environment inside of our theater. So credit card information, the portions that are needed for settlement, et cetera, are all kept locally at the theater in its own unique network segment. And we've now added a connectivity directly from our POS devices, well, not the POS devices, but from the theater, also on this same unique network segment to our providers. So this encrypted credit card data is flowing from POS to the provider and back, and that's it. It's not in back office systems. It's not in corporate systems. It's not transmitted around. It's not in databases. We have lost some of the identifying mechanisms that we could use for things like loyalty and some of our buying patterns and stuff, because we don't have that. But that's been far less impactful and far easier to manage, and longer term, the total cost of ownership of managing all those different mitigating controls are just so lessened so much. And one of the conclusions that drove us to that was we have the PCI standards as they exist today, and they're not going to grow less. The new types of threats from hacking and security breaches is not going to be reduced or simplified. It's only going to become more sophisticated, you know, newer, better. And so the threats are going to continue. And so kind of causing our credit card data to hunker down and not be so exposed by having it so prevalent throughout our infrastructure, we decided was the prudent way to go.
To be fair, one of the points that the chairperson of the new PCI committee mentioned this morning is simply that the reason they felt the compensating controls were important was not necessarily because to avoid having to go through the efforts on encryption, but that there are certain companies, particularly those with strong legacy systems, and that converting the mainframe data or applying encryption to that is a lot more onerous than the PCI group had intended. And they said that was a good chunk behind that, which seems to make sense as far as it goes.
Evan, the goal here is to protect the data. And there's two ways to protect the data. One is to keep the data encrypted, which is, for many people, the easiest and cheapest way, but it also limits the practical utility of some of that data. As David just talked about, you know, you can't use that data for other purposes once you've stripped it down and encrypted it. The other way to do it is lock every door, every window, and examine every person who has contact with it. So you've got to make a business decision, what's the best way to protect the data. And as long as you can demonstrate that what you're doing is reasonable in terms of a compensating control towards the goal of protecting that data, I think that the PCI standards are going to let you do it if it really does achieve that goal.